Welcome everyone to the Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting. Before we start, I have some announcements. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or the Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and it's not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. I'd like to remind the public that are attending in person, but they're attending, but there are public comment cards at the table outside. Please complete them and turn them to the admin to help expedite public comments. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for considerations. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCP Water website. At this point, all committee members are present. And we'll move to item number one. Derek Cooper, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
We honor. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to move on to item number two, public comment. Are there any comments from the public attending in person at this time? No, what about virtually?
There's not one.
Okay. All right, let's move on to item number three. We recommend authorizing the general manager to enter into a contract under the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan. And this will be presented by Dolores Campos.
Good evening. Thank you, Chair O and members of the committee. My name is Dolores Campos. I'm a water conservation specialist. I'm filling in for Matt Dickens. He just had surgery yesterday, so we wish you well, Matt, if you're listening. I hope you're resting. I hope you're not. I will be providing a presentation in support of the staff report included in the committee's packet on the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan, RFP. Next slide, please. Tonight's presentation objective is that the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to execute a contract not to exceed $495,090 with ANN Technical Services for development of the SCB Water Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan. Next slide. This presentation will be going over the history of water efficiency planning in the Valley, their needs and performance, the RFP selection process, and wrap up with questions and comments. We'll dive right in. The Santa Clarita Valley is no stranger to water conservation and water use efficiency planning and practice. In 2005, the California Water Conservation Council MOU implemented best management practices along with a performance option of 2% annual GPCD reductions, or gallons per capita per days. For GPCD. In 2009, SCB Family of Water Suppliers Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan was adopted and called for a 10% reduction in GPCD, and this plan focused on rate programs and incentives. Then in 2010, SBX 7-7 called for a 20% reduction in GPCD by 2020. In 2012, Valencia Water Company Water Conservation Plan was introduced and called for a 20% reduction by 2020, as well as leveraged existing plans and efforts. Then in 2013 and 2016, CLWA adopted the Castaic Lake Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan, which included wholesale and purveyor plan and models. It also was in compliance with SBX 7-7, the 20% reduction. Finally, from 20 2020 to 2024, we have had interim conservation targets, which include the 2% continued reductions in gallons per capita per day until 2024. So this chart, this one kind of has like animations on it. So this chart shows production, population, and conservation performance targets from 1995 to 2023. The black dashed line is production in acre feet, where the red dotted line is population. The green bars show conservation targets at 2% reduction in gallons per capita per day per year from 2010 to 2020. So you have your baseline, which is your SBX 7-7 gallons per capita per day of 272. Next, we'll have the additional 2% reductions from 2021 to 2023. And lastly, you'll have our SEB water interim targets. The blue bar demonstrates what production would look like assuming use remained at 272 gallons per capita per day times actual population by year. Slide, please. Oh, click again. Yeah. The red dashed line is the SBX 7-7 baseline at 272 gallons per capita per day. The green is our 20% conservation target of 218 by 2020. The interim conservation performance in 2023 hit a 41% reduction in gallons per capita per day. SEB Water's mission is to provide responsible water stewardship to ensure the Santa Clarita Valley has reliable supplies of high-quality water at a reasonable cost, of which water conservation and water use efficiency are critical components to agency success. Water conservation and water use efficiency efforts not only impact our operations, services, and priorities, but also work to improve service, credibility, and outcomes throughout the community. Successful implementation of these efforts are crucial to accomplishing our mission and imperative to achieving our vision to exemplary water management for a high quality of life in the Santa Clarita Valley. Next slide, please. Specifically, the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan. This project will deliver our water demand forecasting tool, which complies with state water conservation mandates and also improves demand forecasting. Another deliverable we'll see is strategies and measures, the actual plan, which will inform our urban water management plan, supply planning and investments, and inform revenue plan, planning and rate design. Lastly, it'll also supply a performance tracking and reporting tool, which will enhance customer service engagement and education, and enhance community sustainability, reduce energy consumption, and reduce GHG emissions. In 2018, the legislature enacted two key policy bills, AB 1668 and SB 606, to implement the conservation long-term framework. The two bills provide new and expanded authorities and requirements, such as the water use objective, which aims to reduce indoor consumption, reduce irrigation water use for landscapes for residential, commercial, industrial, and institutional customers, and meeting water loss targets and standards. Slide. Here we are, in that blue box. We submitted our first annual reports in 2024 on January 1st, which we met our urban water use objectives. However, only the Department of Water Resources has delivered its recommendations for the methodologies and standards for the framework. And we are waiting for the State Water Resources Control Board to release its proposed recommendations. Recently, the Legislative Administrative Office, LAO, determined that the SWRCB's proposed recommendations were untenable and not cost-effective, therefore sending SWRCB staff back to the drawing board. We expect them to release their new proposed regulations in the summer or fall of 2024. This may require urban water suppliers to resubmit their reports based on updated and approved recommendations. Next slide, please. Our project scope consisted of five tasks. The launch data analysis, development of the water demand forecast tool, the plan for water efficiency strategies and measures, and creation of the water use efficiency strategic plan and program tracking tool. The statement of work and schedule is as follows. You have your project launch, which is slated for the beginning of April. Well, task 1 through 4 to be completed through the end of this year, and the water use efficiency strategic plan to be up for consideration and adoption somewhere between January and March of next year. The completion of task 5 and project completion by 2025, by June of 2025. The request for proposals, our RFP, was released back in January on Planet Bids and follows the schedule laid out on this slide. You have January 19th was when it was posted. Questions were due by the end of January and proposals were due before February 23rd. And we are here today at the Water Resources and Watershed Committee. And we'll have our SCV Water Board of Directors meeting on April 2nd, 2024. Three companies responded to the RFP. We had Bayer, Madouse Water Management, and A&N Technical. Staff from various departments within the agency reviewed and discussed the proposals and selected A&N Technical as the most responsive and qualified proposal. Some of the highlights for this proposal was their emphasis on technical research and analysis, which earned them the highest remarks on meeting the scope of work. Funding for this work is included in the fiscal year 2024 and fiscal year 2025 Water Sustainability and Efficiency Professional Services. Finally, staff recommends that the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to execute a contract not to exceed $495,090 with A&N Technical Services for development of the SCV Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we move on to questions and comments from directors, we do have a submitted comment card from Cisa Matos, or I'm sorry, from the company Matos. Please go ahead. Make your statement.
Okay, before or after your comments?
Pardon?
Sure. My name is Lisa Madouse with Madouse Water Management, and we have collaborated with SCV Water for over 10 years. You're actually the first water use efficiency strategic plan we were awarded when we incorporated my sister and I as a small woman-owned business. We're a second-generation company. We've been doing this a long time, and we've collaborated with Steve and Dirk and others. We helped on the past urban water management plan. So we know we weren't successful this time, but the regulations were actually just released. The Making Conservation Way of Life regulations were released yesterday. We know this is going to take a village, and so I was here nearby, and I thought I would come today to just express both my appreciation, but also interest in ongoing collaboration with SCV Water and whatever role we have, subspecialties in water efficiency. We stress kind of community engagement in our proposal. We do research. We do peer review. I actually served with Tom Chestnut from A&N Technical Metropolitan Water District of Southern California on their Water Tomorrow plan, their integrated plan. Put together a demand expert panel, and Tom and I served on that together. So, I mean, that's where we're peer reviewers, you know, we're collaborators. So I feel like it's on the team. And so I wanted to just come and we also have a lot of institutional knowledge. You know, I feel the emphasis was on demand forecasting, and certainly was in 2020 because we had this, you know, nebulous kind of gray area without the regulation. So I feel like now is the time. Matt's team really has their due to have a robust strategic plan, you know, come forward. And he's world-class. Like your program here is stellar. And those are the programs that we really enjoy, like, collaborating on and innovating with. And so if we have fresh ideas for you or support we can lend or institutional knowledge, we have past modeling we've done, you know, we're happy to share that insight with you in any form or fashion. We have specialty in CII, so one aspect of the new regulation will be specialty and commercial, institutional, and industrial customers in particular, and we have a subspecialty in that where we do a lot of field assessments. Matt knows this, but I haven't met Dolores yet and new team members, so Wireless, you know, AMI, smart metering, we do a lot of detailed analysis in different areas, so it might be a nice complement from other things that you're doing. I just wanted to come say thank you for the 10 years, over 10 years we've had together, and just make the opportunity or express my interest, our team's interest, and continue collaboration, whatever form that takes.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Who's your point of contact at the other agencies?
Well, it would be Matt Dickens, or it would be Ali, I think, well, who took Dirk's role. I've yet to meet him in person either. But yeah, that's our, yep.
Okay.
So
I mean,
one of them. We know Matt really well. We served on committees with him.
You know, we certainly have to abide by the bidding process.
Yeah.
So we have to follow that. But thank you for coming in and expressing your points. And
sure.
All right.
Sure.
Directors, comments, questions? Oh, hold on. Are there any virtual attendees with questions, comments?
There is not a lot.
Okay. Directors? Everyone's looking at you.
Yeah.
We're down here a little bit. Let me give you an overview of the process that you see for developing the new water demand forecast law. I really don't see the scope here. It seems to have the right elements of coordinating with PAS. And there's also just discussion about coordinating with the agency's existing modeler. But maybe just an overview of that, if that's available.
Yeah, and I can jump in from what Dolores, and I want to thank Dolores for stepping in for Matt, obviously. He wanted to be here tonight, but could not. I mean, this is obviously, you guys know Matt, you know his passion about these things, right? We'll get through with a few less adjectives tonight, but Matt was, very instrumental in putting together the scope of work for this effort. Hugely important for our agency to get this right. You know, it's a pretty simple equation when you start looking at the urban plan and how we, do business. You have supply and you have demand. Well, this side of the equation is the demand side of the equation. And so, as Director Marks knows, it's hugely important to try and get that right. And it's extremely difficult to get that right nowadays because it's moving, it's dynamic. And so this idea about the process and how to kind of roll up that analysis, it's going to flow something like this. So we have another consultant that has what's called the water demand factor tool. So it's basically a GIS platform that is going to house data and information about demand forecasting. So the first step that this work effort is going to do, and this work effort is going to feed into that tool in part. It'll also feed into the water use efficiency tracking software. So it's kind of two ends of that of where this work is going to feed into. Specifically to the demand forecast, Director Martz. So the first step is basically creating the base. So it's going to create a base water demand, and that's really going to look at how water is used today, right? So we have meter records, obviously, of how people are using, our existing customers are using water today. So it's kind of a look backwards to try and project forwards. And it's more of a simplistic approach based on actual demands. And then the next step that is going to take forward is overlaying a step that looks at what's called TAS and then economics of kind of the ups and flows of how the economy changes demands, which we've seen over time. So that's going to be another layer. So you'll have the base layer, then you'll have a layer that adds on and analyzes the TAS and the economic data. The TAS data sounds fancy, but it's traffic area zone. And it's a methodology that the agencies used. A lot of the work, Madaus had worked with us on that as well over time. It essentially takes the land use planning areas and puts a reality check on how much development potentially will happen in a given area. And this really becomes important in like undeveloped areas, right? Because you have acreage with zoning applied to it. Well, everybody knows that full acreage doesn't develop because there's restrictions. There's hillsides, there's traffic, which drives a lot of these decisions that go through the planning agencies. So traffic area zoning allows you to try and take a better projection of what you think the ultimate build out will be of planning areas. And so that's going to be a specific one, direct amongst, that gets analyzed, laid out so that it can overlay on the first, the base modeling. Then the next step is going to take and conduct climate impact analysis. So we're going to look at and do analysis of what we think climate is going to do to our future demands. And so that'll be another layer that lays on top of those demand projections. The next step is going to be looking at passive conservation. So you guys will probably remember this from the last urban plan, right? We had kind of passive and active. Passive are things that just happen because you're building the new home stocks coming on a much more efficient, right, than the old home stock. When you go to buy a toilet at Home Depot, you can't buy a 3.5 gallon toilet anymore. You're buying a high efficiency toilet. So there's things that are built into the process that happen passively without any work. The next layer that's going to get built on top of that is active conservation. So these are the programs and things that the agency actively promotes. So there's going to be a poll analysis of that in this water use efficiency strategic plan about what types. They're going to first look back at what we've been doing, how those programs have been, you know, taken up by the community, the effects of those. And then they're going to project and try to walk forward what it'll look like for the future for different active, you know, conservation efforts. So those are the layers that are going to build off the base demand. And then that work, Direct Marks, is going to link into the water demand factor tool. So it's going to provide the data that goes in to that pool that will be able to catalog and visualize where that demand is in kind of geospatially in the valley. So hopefully I walked through that and answered the question that I think you were asking.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
And then the new water conservation regulations are going to be incorporated into somehow be incorporated into that, into these demands for them.
Yeah, mainly showing up in the active. So that'll be part of that.
Active programs.
Yeah, as part of that analysis, yes.
Thank you.
And it sounds like those new regulations, all I've seen are the news articles, which don't give any detail, but it sounded like 278 agencies in the state are going to stay kind of right where they're at. And the other ones, they're going to modify based on the agency. It's not going to be one size fits all. So we don't even know where we're at in that, what those goals are now.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a major part of this effort is getting those new regs. As Lisa just pointed out, they came out yesterday.
Yeah.
So we have them now, which is good. But yeah, that's the way those regulations are working is they have water use objectives. And so those get assigned to individual agencies, basically. And so there's the residential sector, which has indoor and outdoor. And then there's the CII, commercial and institutional industrial sector, that have kind of a different set of rule book that is going to be applied to them. And so this plan will walk through all of that and try to identify active conservation steps that will get us to those water use objectives.
Yeah. In the process, I'd be interested in hearing more about the history of uptake in our valley, and how that's reflected in the demands, or how that is reflected in the implementation of the programs to meet those objectives. It's kind of a blessing and a curse being in a better off, economically better off region, in that we can afford to do things maybe a little more readily than other communities, but then again, we're not as sensitive to maybe certain cost factors or things that might be perceived as an inconvenience. So that whole uptake issue. Just looking forward to seeing the analysis and strategies that surround that.
Ms. Campos, can you go on? Can we see your slide 5 in the presentation?
5?
Yes, the plot where it shows population production achieved conservation efforts. There we go, this one. So looking at the production plot, obviously we can look at, we don't know 2024 here, but at the very end of the production, are we anticipating that to be like an inflection point? Is it going to start going up a little bit, or are we expecting it to continue on that trend?
It's been going down, so we expect it to continue to go down as far as production. But you could see that at different various points, though, that it has been going up. Like in 2019, 18, around there, we saw it kind of go up. Production went up.
Well, it's also noticeable to see the population too. The rate of growth is kind of a stagnant there between 2022 and 2023. Are we also anticipating that to stay in that at that level, or is it going to now increase post COVID?
We expect it to increase, but we also saw that we've seen people leave SEB. So I think it's just going to kind of increase, but maybe not as much.
I think that's Doris is projecting the things right. I think, and this is why those layers of how we look at demand is not a simple equation, right? Because if you were to base it, the way we used to always base it, we'd go back 10 years and we'd say, oh, the demand averaged X, and so it's going to do the same thing going forward, right? That changed a lot because of SB 787, right? Where there was a purposeful movement towards reducing water use. But in those downward trends, there's a bunch of other things like economics, right? In 2008, that wasn't necessarily any kind of regulation. That was the economy being tanked, right? And so that influenced how people used water, and they used less. And then you see a rebound, and it started coming up, but it never, made it as high as it did before. And then what happened in, 13, 14, 15, there was a big drought. And so there was a huge call for conservation, and people responded to that. And so it went down again, but then it rebounded, and it started coming up again, but not as high as it had previously. And then, sequencing of droughts and other things. I think when you look at the most recent period, right, 2021 through 2023, you've got two major influences in there. You've got, again, a drought. So there was calls for conservation again. And then you rebounded with a huge weather year. And so the combination of those two things, drove us along with, the constant conservation ethic that is getting pushed out there. It drove us to the lowest that we've had, in decades.
Yeah.
So to expect it to stay there, I don't think is probably what's going to happen. I think there's going to be a tend to see it want to rebound depending on what weather does. But now we're going to overlay kind of the next generation of water conservation rules. And so what does that do? And that's what this report is going to try and get after, is how do we project that knowing what that history looks like?
Understood. And as far as the water use efficiency tracking tool, what do we have right now?
So we don't have a very nimble tool to track kind of the implementation of our programs. We had a model that forecasted what we needed to do. And we've been using that to project kind of our expenses on the different programs. It identified specific programs. It had cost estimates for those and projected what you would need to do to achieve certain goals. The groups that have been working collaboratively in the state now have developed a tracking tool that is, I don't think it's too widely used yet, but it is ready to be used, and that's the tool that we're suggesting that this information gets put into so that we can track going forward. So that's a collaborative group of the Alliance for Water Use Efficiency that has developed that tool in coordination with folks like Lisa, Matt on our staff's been hugely influential on that tool, so that's something that we're looking to leverage going forward.
Okay. And just a quick follow-up. So going from 47 GPPD to 42, are we currently utilizing the AMIs that we have online to kind of figure that out?
No. I mean, I shouldn't say that so quickly. We use meter information to project and those things, but we haven't been using the functionality of AMI to do that.
Okay. Any other questions, comments from directors? President Martin?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Chair Ozahowski. Dolores, good to see you tonight. You joined us. I'm happy to see a new face, really. We've seen the evidence in the past of the value of active conservation. We've seen the numbers. I believe the numbers. This seems to take it to another level, putting more and more science behind what we do. And we don't really have an option. Conservation is such an important component of our overall water supply portfolio. It's hard to look at it that way, but it actually is, right? It seems like, are the rest of the water agencies doing something similar to this? Not the rest. You wouldn't happen to know the rest, but it seems like a water conservation strategic plan seems to be assistance from a firm that does this full time. Not that our conservation team doesn't do it full time, but this seems to apply a much higher level of expertise to the problem. And so obviously I support it. We need to reach our conservation goals, and they're going to be more challenging going ahead. And I'm just wondering, does that mean that all the teenagers have to move out of the valley? Or do they get a special exemption?
No, they're learning how to conserve now so that they have a supply later.
So I'm very supportive. When we get to the part about the consent or presentation, I think the full board needs to hear about this plant and this program. I think they'll want to hear about it, and so that would be my suggestion. So, thank you.
I definitely agree. Mr. Cooper?
Nope. No. Very good.
Monks? Yeah. Okay. Please, both go ahead. Let's move this to the full board then.
Thank you, Ms. Campos. If I may, the draft regulations came out yesterday. So there's a public hearing on March 20th. So maps out, but I'll talk to you, Dolores, if you want. There's a workshop the day before presentation. So things are happening. So I don't know who approves what letter, but if you want to comment, we'll map out. That's certainly a fine action. That's just an update to what we said. So
that's good.
Yeah.
I'd send him the regulations while he's in the hospital.
I know. I'm on purpose.
You got time.
Your staff must have loved you.
He's not waiting. I'm calling.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad.
Good. It should be.
Okay. I would have hung up.
Yeah. Good. All right. Let's move forward to item number 4. Discussion of the draft recycled water use ordinance presented by Mr. Cole. Cole, please walk us through it.
Yes, thank you, Chair Orzechowski. So before you tonight, I think I'm going to just run through the staff report. And I had asked that Uni just have the map up there so that we can reference as I talk through some of these areas, what they are and where they are. So a little bit of background, recycled water in the valley, and I'm going to do just really high level. And if you guys have questions, I'd be happy to drill in deeper. Started over, you can see the Valencia WRP square there on the left edge, we'll call the western side of the valley. That purple line there that goes to the south was the first phase of recycled water in the valley. And that first phase roughly uses 450 acre foot per year of recycled water in the valley. Basically just some landscape accounts along the way, and then also the country club over there uses recycled water for the golf course. So that's the main user. We've recently been significantly expanding the service territory. So phase 2D is the little brown one there that's got the circle on the western side. Basically, that goes into Westridge, over in kind of ends in the area of the high school and the junior high. Obviously, the Newhall Ranch development has a large component of recycled water service. That infrastructure is being installed by the developer as the development is building. And then on at the east end of the valley, we have the Vista Canyon project, where they have a what they call a water factory, but it basically takes local sewer and treats it locally for use as recycled water. That's the little blue kind of area. And then we, the water agency, extended off of that what's called phase 2B, which is the brown area and a couple tanks that are involved with that. And then soon to be, we're exploring the extension, it's called phase 2C, which is kind of the golden area, right, called right in the middle of the town there, an extension there that will go by College of the Canyons and some other irrigation accounts. That phase has been broken into two sub-phases. The whole phase was originally planned to terminate at basically Hart High School down in that area, but we're going to bite that off in smaller chunks as the infrastructure is fairly expensive, especially right now, to put that in. So we have these facilities that we just last week finally received permits through the regional board to be allowed to serve the recycled water. So you probably will all remember that's been a very long road. Started with having to take care of the state board's requirements for 1211 permitting and new drop. We achieved that. That was a huge accomplishment. I can't overstate how big of an accomplishment that was to get that through. We've been working since that time to get the actual end user permitting done, and that has finally arrived. And so we are ready to turn on taps, recycled water taps. And so that brings us to, well, how do you get people, especially in those areas that are converting, to convert? The board supported a program called Purple Prep. You'll probably remember that. That was a means by which the water agency was trying to help people convert so that the cost wasn't an obstacle to doing that. That program has not worked. And so I think one of the main questions we get is, do we have to do this? And our answer right now is no, you don't have to do it. It's the right thing to do, but you don't have to do it. And that takes us forward to what we're bringing forward to you tonight, which is a mandatory recycled water use ordinance. And so the state of California has laws in place that make the use of recycled water mandatory if certain things are made, and that's laid out in the ordinance. It's basically about a three-part test. So you have... is it available? That's the first part of the test. So that was pretty easy, right? Is you actually have recycled water? Is the infrastructure in? Is it right in front of your connection? So you got to make that determination. The second one is, does it meet health and safety standards for the service of recycled water, which our water treatment plants in the valley do meet that threshold, and they're regularly sampled, and they do meet the health and safety standards for safe use. And then the third is provided at a reasonable cost. And that one is a little more nebulous about what does that mean. Couple things on that. Our recycled water rate that we sell water is roughly, I believe it's 20% less than the retail rate. And so that's one way that the water agency is trying to make it reasonable, because to service recycled water, there is some requirements for the end user. They have to have an on-site supervisor. They have to do certain testing and things that they otherwise would not have to do if it was potable water. And so there is some ownership, you know, challenges there of getting people up to speed and signing agreements and things like that. The other piece to reasonable costs, at least so far, has been the Purple Prep program that was really designed to make it reasonable to convert so that you weren't laden with the full cost of conversion. So we think we have the three-part test pretty well covered. So that's laid out in the ordinance. The ordinance takes a really, I call it, simple approach. It basically just gives, clearly states the authorities that the state has given us and puts it into a ordinance that we can adopt. And then it would authorize the general manager to make these notice of determination for these kind of these three-part tests. That will give us the ability to answer that question more directly. Is it required? Yes. And then it just becomes, okay, well, then how, right? And not if. It's like, how are we going to do this? So that's what's before you tonight. Wanted to bring it through committee, get any thoughts on that. These things can sometimes become controversial because the community members that may be required to convert recycled water might not want that requirement. And so I just want everybody to be aware of that as we're kind of stepping through this process. The purpose of the ordinance, as it's stated in the ordinance, is to prevent the waste of potable water, promote the conservation and reuse of water resources, and then ensure maximum public benefit for the use of the agency's potable and recycled water supply in accordance with applicable federal, state, and local requirements. So it's a pretty simple purpose that's laid out, and we think this accomplishes that. So one other reason for processing a recycled water use ordinance is we are receiving some direction from granting authorities, specifically a grant that we received for phase 2C.
Okay.
That they are wanting us to have stronger capabilities to ensure that the grant funds that you're utilizing to put the infrastructure in actually end up using recycled water, right? And so that they're wanting to close that full loop. And so they have requested documentation from us to show that in this latest grant application that we're negotiating with them. So that's kind of the second component. And with that, I'll stop my presentation, be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, comments from the public? Okay. Director, Dr. Cooper.
Does this mean, say you run 2C and you run it down past COC and Cal Arts and Vista Valencia Golf Course and actually could even come across the freeway and go to Valencia Golf Course, Big V. Does that mean that if it's available, you can say you have to lay off your groundwater well and use reclaimed water?
I would say it means that if recycled water is available, yes, that we could make a requirement that they use recycled water. So there is some dynamics with the wells that could be an interesting dynamic, and I'll raise that question up through legal to see in those instances, because Little V has a well also.
Yes.
And so that, you know, process, but Little V also uses potable.
Right.
Yeah. Big V, depending if the well goes down, then they use potable. Yeah. So it's, there are some dynamics with those two specific golf courses that are unique.
So they could do it like the other golf course where it goes into a lake, they pump it out of the lake and that goes into their purple pipe system.
But those, each of there's pretty major conversions that may need to happen at either of those, and we haven't fully explored what those conversions look like yet.
with the governor's new regulation that says you need to get rid of all the unused grass or
non-functional
turf. That's a hard one for me. Non-functional turf. What does that do to our reclaim water program? Because if non-functional turf is not being irrigated, who are our users out there?
I think it changes it, honestly. Potentially does. I think we're trying to be really judicious about how far we invest in recycled water now. There's, you know, two things. One is the 1211 thing is still pushing the ceiling that is there, and it's real. And just the cost of expanding the infrastructure is when you do a cost per acre foot analysis, it doesn't look so great.
I mean, direct potable reuse will make it much less expensive, and you don't have to put in the infrastructure. You can put it into your system wherever it's going to be, and you don't have to worry about those customers out there. 20% probably, when we first looked at it 20 years ago, that's what we had at 20% then. I'm not sure that's going to buy it anymore from them. They're going to say, yeah, it's cost-effective for us.
So if I can jump in on that train, but so when these connections were made, when Purple Prep was in its infancy design stage, I imagine that we seeked out potential customers and had their input and their, you know, substantial buy-in. So what happened? What happened with Purple Prep doing that, doing those talks?
Yeah, I think time has changed. I think a lot of it. And so specifically in phase 2D, there has been a issue with that specific HOA of trust that kind of emanated from a water tank sandblasting challenge, right? And so that trust has found its way into kind of the relationship of getting those services lined up. And so that's been a shift. Also in phase 2D, it was our first go at trying to convert schools. And that has taken a lot more effort and time than one would expect in trying to build that relationship. On phase 2C, we've talked to College of the Canyons, we've talked to Cal Arts. They are both interested parties. The city, obviously, is a very interested party.
Okay.
So we are trying to get ahead of it a little bit more on that aspect on phase 2C. The Newhall Ranch development is different because it's getting put in from the beginning, so it's not a conversion. Vista Canyon, similar. It's not a conversion for the in-track stuff. And the outside, the phase 2B, are some HOAs and also the city. So there's some kind of built-in will there to convert those user sites.
Okay, so on this map, can you just let me know? So I imagine Vista Canyon Water Factory and the surrounding infrastructure there, there's no issues with those customers accepting it and using it, right? Okay. All right. Where's the majority issue on this map?
I think right now it would be in the phase 2D. It's that circle on the most western edge there.
Okay,
Brown, Dr. Brown, I think if I'm looking at the right.
This one?
Yes.
So
yes.
Those schools are hesitant?
Yes.
There's three schools there.
Three schools.
So the schools and there's I think 28 landscape conversions along that route in the Westridge project.
All the small parks, and, yeah.
Common areas.
Owned by the city, or
those are. It's a strange relationship. So it is owned by the Westridge Homeowners Association, but it is maintained by the County Landscape Maintenance District.
It's not in the city.
It's not the city, yeah.
And the county has expressed interest, but it is the HOA's decision on whether to participate or not.
But if it's made available and the line's in, then they have to.
That would be a tool that we don't currently have. But along with that, it could create some challenges just with the relationship that are already challenged.
Dr. Marks?
Oh, sort of like the only lever that was in the ordinance was after the general manager made a determination that it was available and we were not fitting reach that we could end service.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, it's got it's a big hammer in there. If you don't follow through, if they don't follow through with allowing service using permanent, that would be pretty intense.
Yes. I was wondering if there was thought to making some gradual financial penalty. If that was thought, or if the thought was you need to comply with state law. This is it. Do we plan? I guess the other question I have, do we plan to continue the purple prep program in conjunction with the ordinance?
That would be my recommendation, to do that. We're budgeting to do it this next cycle. I think without it, we don't meet the three-part test. And the reasonable cost is actually in the law. That it's defined that you're going to make the use mandatory, it has to be a reasonable cost.
Kind of an interesting test what reasonable cost is in a zoning area, or what is reasonable cost compared to the water rates that occur in South Orange County. I don't have answers to any of those questions, but
so this just kind of gets us through the grant people saying that we need something in place that shows we're heading in that direction.
Yeah, I think it does those two things. It gives us the ability to be more direct with, do we have to use it? Because we do get that question from every time we're out pushing the Purple Prep program. People are like, well, do we have to do it? And as soon as you answer no, it's like, okay. I'll go on to the other million things that I've got to do.
Sure.
And then the second component is that, yes, it is being specifically asked for as part of the grant finalization process.
Okay, so if it does not, if nothing moves forward, then are we going to be asked to refund the grant money that we've already spent and we used?
I would say they will most likely pull it.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many occasions have representatives from those schools visited, our offices, our Rio Vista plant, not really connected, but have we provided them frequent tours, explanations, maybe showing them our laboratory?
I can't remember that specifically, but yeah, I mean, we've met with him several times. We had a meeting, General Manager Stone and myself did, with the superintendent of PART. He was supportive of the program. It just never, they changed operational personnel. So kind of the people that are in charge of like the actual operations, and we lost, kind of we're gaining momentum and then we lost momentum when that change happened. And we're trying to build that momentum again now. So a lot of it, you know, depends on kind of the staffing that's involved at the specific sites themselves.
Yeah. And they have no money. They're giving layoff notices now to 60 to 80 people for next year, and yeah, their budget is pretty
bad. So my other question is, the rates for this water, they would be 20% lower than regular water.
Okay.
And it will, the conversion will be heavily subsidized by us, right?
We have proposed for their project to cover the conversion.
Total?
Yes. And there's a little bit of, there's always complexities in it when you go to look at the different end user. That the high school specifically had two different service potentials. One was a looped system that was much more expensive, and one was a single line system. So a lot of the negotiation was happening over that. Was a loop system necessary to service the recycled water to the high school? But the idea was to cover the conversion cost through the Purple Prep program for that school.
Okay. Mr. Martin?
Thank you, Chair Ozaski. We don't really have an option here, do we? This isn't an optional program or an optional ordinance that we need to pass. And we need to follow the water code.
I think we would like to have the tools now in place to make the program a success. And so it's really, how do you go about doing that? It's the challenge.
I can see where the heat may be off slightly because of our big water year last year, the good water year this year, but it's coming back. And I just, unless you say we don't have to do this is a voluntary program, and it looks to me like it's mandatory. Is that true?
We have certainly installed the infrastructure, and if we don't find a way to get end users to convert, the infrastructure will not be utilized.
I mean, the capital projects for the recycled water program are very expensive. So, I don't know that I have the answer to whether it's mandatory on the part of the state and they'll enforce it through us, or it's our job to enforce it.
I think it's our job to enforce
it. Our job to enforce it. But we have the state mandatory program behind us.
They've given us the legal authority to do to play that role.
All right. It just seems to me we don't have a choice on this, to make it as easy as we can on the customers and try to help them as much as possible. But I don't think we can.
We might not.
A number of years down. I mean, that's a ways down the road before we ever get to that. But it has to be in place and available to them, and then you can do it. But you got to have the money through the grants to get it into place to put it there. So.
But I think in the near term, we've got three schools and 28 service connections in phase 2T, which this ordinance would apply to. And I take it in phase 2B, the non-Vista Canyon folks that they are supportive at the structure.
They've been more receptive. A couple of them are city accounts. The city's all in.
Okay, so these are.
And there's a couple HOAs over there that have been very receptive.
Okay. Are we time constrained here on this? Meaning, do we need to have an ordinance in place in order to receive further grants?
I would say yes, that clock is ticking. Yeah.
Months, 2 months, a year.
They're trying to turn things around April 1st, our grant. I think as long as we have at least a strong draft ordinance, it may be enough for that process to get through, but it's something that they will write into the grant as something that's going to need to be part of it.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to move forward with the agenda today, but is there, I mean, this is going to be a heated discussion at the board meeting, that's for sure. But could we increase our communication with Rest Ranch, with the 2D section here?
We are still in active discussions with them, yes, as recently as a couple of weeks ago.
Could we contact the original buy-in individuals that were selected representatives and have them join the discussions?
For Westridge?
Yeah.
The high school or for the...
Well, you know, I mean, all three, right? Or all two are reluctant. So whoever was the original person that the water agency approached for Purple Pipe and gave a favorable buy-in would be... You know, could we add them to these discussions? Could we reach out to them, see if they're available?
That's the staff handles.
I mean, okay.
Yeah. I hear your concern. I think we can definitely communicate with them on this topic.
Okay. And what is your recommendation here in terms of this ordinance? I mean, I've read it. I'm not happy with those kind of ordinances, but I understand the history behind it. Do you want to take some more time to look at the verbiage, or are you ready to present this to the full board?
Yeah, I think from a staff's perspective, we definitely would like to hear from the full board on whether they want to move forward with it or not. And it is a choice for sure for a policy. So. I think it's in a form that's ready to do that.
Directors, any protests on that movement? Or
I think if you say you're not, if the board says they're not moving forward, then recycled water goes out the door. You're not going to get grants. You're not going to qualify for anything. You don't have the money to build the pipelines. You know, I mean, they're saying. The grant people are saying you need to have this kind of stuff in place to get money.
Well, and you're walking away, it'll be investments that we've already made in phase 2D, we basically be
lost
away from.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move to the full board.
I appreciate all the input on that.
Those 9 o'clock meetings you were talking about.
Pardon?
There goes those 9 o'clock meetings that Maria was talking about.
Bring a lunch with you.
We sit out all the thank yous.
Okay. Tough work ahead for the staff. No doubt about it. Let's move to item number 5. Recommend authorizing the general manager to execute an agreement for the purpose of funding the next phase of the Delta Conveyance Project planning cost, presented by Mr. Alassan. Mr. Alassan.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening. And I think we're leaving the best for the last. I hope this is not going to be controversial.
You just got harder each one of you go.
It's what is, yeah, I'm trying, you know, not to make it as hard as the other two items today, but recently, you have received a presentation, I think in January 16th of this year, from the Delta Conveyance Authority staff, as well as the DWR staff, who came down here and gave a presentation to the board about the Delta Conveyance and all of that. So, and as you know, the environmental certification, the EIR certification happened last year, gave a big momentum for the project. And with all of this, still there is a continuous effort in doing the planning for the project. And this presentation is specifically talking about the focuses on the continuing participation in the planning process and to continue securing our seat in the table for all the participants that over the years that we have been members of the participation of the DCP project. And so this, I'm trying to lay presentation to guide you through the, what are going to be the next planning steps, as well as what will be the requirement, the funding requirement for that. Next slide, please. So the State Water Project contributes about 50% on average of the annual water supply for our agency, but its importance is beyond the participation in providing the 50% of the water. It's the it helps us extend the life of our local water supplies, the groundwater mainly, and also it acts as in a supplemental supply when we don't have the groundwater, you know, and this became very clear recently when we took a couple of wells out of services that we rely on a lot of the water that's coming from the State Water Project. And so being in our portfolio, our diversified portfolio, is a very important factor. In addition to that, it's the main source of water for our banking operations in the center of the valley. So when we have excess water, we put water in the bank and we take it later on when we have drought. So it plays a big role in our portfolio, in addition to just provide not only providing 50%, but even now when we are anticipating planning for recharge projects, the recharge study that we presented to you a week ago, we used the main source of supply was utilizing the State Water Project, the excess water that's for us. So for us, it's very important. And also another thing that I need to mention is it's based on the analysis and the study that's done by the DWR recently, as well as I think it's done by Berkeley, University of Berkeley. For them, they found out that it's one of the most affordable sources of water supply in California in comparison to every source again. And I think in relation to the recycled water we are talking about, the cost per acre foot in comparison to a State Water Project the State Water Project is very affordable. For us in locally here, the cost of the State Water Project in the last five, the average of the last 5 years, 6 years, is about $600 to $700 per acre foot. And this is one of the options that we, again, you know, with all the importance of the benefits that we reap from the State Water Project, it's a very good investment that the organization and agency and the Valley have been investing for the last decades, many decades in the last century and now. Next slide, please. So I think they shared some of the benefits and the drivers for the State Water Project, the conveyance project. I will just provide a refresher of why we need the State Water Project. The Delta Conveyance Project is protects against future water supply losses caused by climate extremes, sea level rise, and earthquakes. The State Water Project, again, you know, is one of the most important systems in the state, and so to provide protection for it, the Delta Conveyance Project provide all of those. It will help the State Water Project safely capture, move, and store water from big and infrequent storm events that we'll start seeing more and more in the future. And specifically, there is a couple of information that's shared by the Department of Water Resources and their analysis that they have been doing for supporting this project. One of them that the climate change models have indicated that more of our precipitation are going to be in form of rain than snow, and that will increase runoff in the rivers, and it will flows actually more in the winter. It flows, we're going to have more flows out of the system, before we capture it and use it through our original systems of reservoirs and dams. And so more rain means more runoff, means more water leaving our system. The second issue is also our main reservoir, which is the Sierra snowpack, is going to be reduced on average by 65% as a result of the climate change toward the end of this century. And a third factor that they were considering when they are evaluating the benefit or the driver for the Delta Conveyance Project is, according to the United States Geological Survey, the USGS, there is a 72% chance of a 6.7 or greater magnitude earthquake occurring in the Bay Delta, in the Bay Area by 2043. And so that could cause levees in the Delta to fail, and accordingly crippling the state's ability to deliver clean waters through the state water system. And that's a big issue that's, I think, that have everyone in the state water project considering and looking into the Delta Conveyance Project. And the last issue is that because of the climate change and all of the change that we see, there is a considerable sea level rise that's predicted by the end of this century. So all of these reasons lead us to developing the project. And the next slide, please, Yuni. What will be the objective of the state water project? Again, when mentioning one thing that observed over the last many years, that the delivery from the state water project has steadily declined by 40% due to several factors, including the climate change, as well as restrictions intended to help the endangered and threatened species in the Delta. So we, and when we started looking into the most recent delivery capability report that the DWR produce every 2 years to tell us the reliability of the state water project, the one that's available for us now is 2021. There is one that's coming very soon, for that, which is going to be 2023. The 2021 delivery capability report indicated that for us here in Santa Clarita Valley, our supply from the state water project is going to be reduced by from 55% in the 2020s to about 52% in the 2040s. And that's a significant reduction into our water supply. That's about, we're going to be around 50,000 acre feet from the 55,000 acre feet that we have the allocation for, or the full amount that we are allocated for in the state water project. So climate change, other factors. And this number, don't hold me on this for this number, because this number is revised now with the new delivery capability report that's coming now in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully we're going to see it. And that's going to change. And all the indications, it's going to show that the reliability is going to be less and less into the future because of all the climate change and all the climate change scenarios that they're considering. So the objective of the state, the Delta Conveyance Project, is to improve the state water project resiliency in face of many risks. The first one is the impact of the seismic risk, and we talked about that. So the state water project is going to create resiliency in the system, and also the climate resiliency, which is helping us and helping the contractors, the state water contractors, to improve the amount of water that received from the state water project as it's continued to decline. It's also provide the state water project operation flexibility so that they improve aquatic conditions and manage risks of additional future constraints. Next slide, please. I think maybe you have seen this many times, many versions, but this is the most up-to-date version that came out about 2 weeks ago, including the big storms that we received in January and February of this year. If the Delta Conveyance Project was operational during the high rain events of the last couple of winters, we would have significant amount of water that could be moved to San Luis Reservoir, and also could be moved to us where we can bank it or do other things with it. Next slide, please. So probably you have seen different versions of this slide in the past presentations, but I will just go quickly over some of the highlights here that our agency has historically invested in the Delta Conveyance Project so that it can reinforce our investment in the State Water Project. And I think since 2007, I was looking in the history, Cascade Lake have been participating in the Delta Conveyance activities. There were different names, there were different projects, different ideas. But since 2007, this agency have been continuing participating in the planning and working to see some of these ideas materialize in life. And I think 2018, when we have the merger of all the agencies, the agency SCV Water took into that responsibility and continued. So the project, our most recent participation in the Delta Conveyance Project is we determined a participation level of 2.6%. And the most recent we have, I think we translated to about contributing about $8.85 million for the planning and permitting and engineering design and everything. And that money take us until 2025. End of 2025, that's where our commitment will end at that time. So now we are facing a new reality and new good information. We have the final environmental impact report certified. So this is a big, big momentum for the project. And the DWR started thinking, what could be done next? And there is still planning that need to be done. There is continual engineering work need to be done. So next slide, please, Yuni. So probably you have seen this again. I'm just borrowing slides from previous presentations that presented to you. So they still have work to be done, and this is their planning schedule. If you go to the next slide, Yuni, I will talk a little bit about giving some details about what are some of the next steps that's shared with the contractors. You know, there is the request now for continuing the funding share for planning, but what that does mean for us? What are activities there? There is so many things that's happening. And I tried to look at, there were so many different schedules that I couldn't fit all of them in one slide here. And so I'm just trying to give you a sense of where are things going. There is the ongoing permitting that's going through early 2027 as planned as of now. And that will include the next steps are going to be the continuing the work on the water rights. Then we have the Delta plan consistency and finishing all the CEQA, NEPA, and ESA, CSA, CESA, all of those permitting activities are going to continue until 2027. This is what's planned right now. At the same time, there is another track for the engineering. The engineering are continuing. Some of the things that's already paid for now is the update of the cost estimates for the project. They're looking into how much it costs us now. And as you remember, I think the number that was shared with us a couple of years ago was $15 billion. That's going to be changing. That's what's shared with us in 2021, I think, if I'm correct in that. But now 4 years down the road or 3 years down the road, it's going to be a little bit different estimate for that. There is also a cost-benefit analysis that's coming during this year to know exactly how much the benefit for each one of the contractors who are participating in the project. And also, there is continuing work on another parallel track, which is continuing developing the conceptual design and also developing the design itself, you know, at 30% and so on. And at the end of all of these activities, there will be an effort for procuring some of these, all of these special work that need to be done by the engineers. So there is a lot of activities that's continuing between now and 2027 to get us, or even beyond 2027, at mainly planning and permitting so that we can get us to shovel-ready project. Next slide, please. So I talked a little bit about the 2.6 contribution or our share, 2.6 share, and I just wanted to give a kind of how that number was determined and how what are some of the principles for determining that number. So we started that the funding or the money for the cost of the project is 100%. It's divided by the 29 state water contractors. That's the total of it. But part of the principles in discussion in the agreements for the project were that provided an option for some of the public water agencies not to participate or to opt out of the project. And for that, the five north of the Delta contractors decided we are not going to benefit from this project. We don't want to be part of it. We are not going to we're not going to pay anything in cost, and we're not going to be entitled for any benefits. So the five decided, the north of the Delta 5 contractor decided we're out. So that's leaving the 24 contractors for south of the Delta with the 100% of the project. But then still as this phrase that was there, as this principle was applicable for also south of the Delta to opt out, six of the south of the Delta participants decided to opt out. And those six, leaving only 18 participants as part of the Delta Conveyance Project at this point. And all of that was taken to be distributed among the 18 members of the current members of the participants of the Delta Conveyance Project. So the next principle is participating contractors, those 18, must be in for at least 100% of their table A percentage. So each, at least them, they come with table A percentage, but still they will have to cover for the others 11 who decided not to participate. So when we looked into our portion of the state water project, we are at 2.28%. But we decided at in 2018 to participate at a level of 2.6% so that we can cover the additional available participation level from five from north of the Delta being out and six south of the Delta being out. So the 2.6 reflect our share in the Delta Conveyance Project. So again, that's the last principle for participation is the agencies may opt out or may opt to participate with more than 100% of their state water project portion. And so that's how we, instead of 2.28%, we are participating at 2.6%. Most recently, there were some discussions about, and then there is a couple of issues still with some of the south of the Delta contractors. There is an opportunity for us to take an advantage of additional, because of all of these dynamics of participation, we anticipate that we can raise our participation level to 3% because there might be additional project participation available for us. And that's the, that, those are the numbers that we are providing to you today. It's between 2.6, which is our current participation level that we approved in the past. And then there is a new chance for adding more to our participation level to 3%. Next slide, please. And then I will show that how, what would that mean in terms of funding for funding share for us. So over the last year, the DWR and the Delta Conveyance Authority developed some scenarios to show how different levels of design and permitting and land acquisition activities could be accomplished in terms of progress, completion date, and overall cost. So they shared with us as participants three scenarios, and these three scenarios range between $200 million for 2026-2027 planning activities at the lowest end to $407 million at the highest end. SCV Water staff selected scenario B+, which is the middle ground of all of these scenarios, and the total cost for that scenario is up to $300 million for the 2 years, 2026-2027. And the reason for that, it's a scenario that's It's advised by the DWR to do analysis based on that scenario and looking into that scenario. I just wanted to mention one thing, that two agencies already approved their participation for the 26-27, the San Gorgonio Pass, as well as San Bernardino Water Agency. Both of them approved, but they picked for, in their presentation, the highest level, the 407, and they approved that for moving forward. For us, after a long conversation internally, we decided to go with the B+, as the DWR is advising agencies to go with that number.
That's 300.
The 300%, the $300 million. So when we look at, if we want to maintain our same level of participation from previous agreement at 2.6%, that will translate to 7.8 million of our share. That will be our share in this 300, in the 300 million. But if we decide to take advantage of some of available additional project participation that's available, and we go to 3%, our share for the project is going to increase to $9 million. And that's the difference is 1.2 million. But that's will have giving us more advantage in the project, and will our actually that will be reflected in the amount of water that's available for us also. So the last thing that I just wanted to share based on this slide and those numbers, and I know there is a lot of numbers here, but I just wanted to give you the range of what, how we are thinking about approaching this. So if we stay at our current participation level, 2.6%, that translates to 7.8 million. If we go to 3%, we'll have more available water if the project moves forward, and we are gonna contribute 9 million for the 2 years. The project fund, our participation will be covered through the state water project fund, which is reflective of our tax revenue and reserve balance. And the numbers in front of you here are the end of June. These are just point of time. End of June projected in the fiscal year 26 and fiscal year 27. So these are the money that's going to be available for us at that time, projected to be available at that time, the balance of our reserve, tax revenue, and everything that's going to be in the state water project fund at that time, so that we can make the payments for those 2 years. Next slide. So in summary of what I talked about in the last slide with all the numbers, it's the scenario that we are considering now is, and we're considering participating at, is at 300 million for planning costs through 2027. Our share, if we go with the 3%, is going to be up to $9 million. There is a big potential that it could be less than that, because if the decision made by DWR to go with the lowest option that they shared to us, the 200 million, our share is going to be less, definitely. And how we're going to pay for it, it allows for collection through the state water project billings. Next slide. With that, the recommendation that the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to execute an agreement for the purpose of funding the next phase of Delta Conveyance project, planning costs for up to $9 million. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, comments from the public? Okay. Virtually?
No.
All right, Directors. Any questions on the Flood Mitigation Delta Conveyance project?
I understand where the money comes from, and that's not an issue. What does the increase from our 2.28 to 3%? What does it buy us? It doesn't increase our cable A. Our cable A stays the same. Does it increase the flood flows that are available in the wintertime when they're able to pump more water through the tunnels? Is that what it's buying us?
That's what's buying us.
And so the people that do not opt in, their capacity in the wintertime is going to be whatever their cable A capacity is. Ours will be increased up to that that larger number. Do we have any idea what that number would be?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do it with flood flows. You don't know how much flood flow there is, but have we had an idea of what that extra going to 3% would buy us?
We have very, very preliminary idea. Don't hold me on it, because they were still, the state water contractors are still reviewing and revising the models and the numbers. Our current participation, the 2.6, having us at 6,000 acre feet extra, that could be available for us.
Over our normal table A would be plus 6,000.
The amount as on average.
On average.
Yeah, on average.
Good years, bad years out.
Yeah. That will go to 11.5%. 11,500 acre feet.
So for $1.2 million, you're adding five and a half, you're almost doubling what you would be able to get at the 3% as opposed to the 2.6%. That is significant. Now, it also makes your cost of the project, your portion of the project in the future is going to be larger.
Correct? Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's
it'll be the 3%.
That's 3% of the project. Yes.
But you're buying an extra 5,500 acre feet of water by doing that.
But I just wanted to make sure that this is mainly for the planning for the next 2 years.
Right.
They are still working on the project cost, you know, and accordingly, you know, it's going to be the same share that we're having here for the planning will be transferred into the cost of the project, the total cost of the project. So, yes, we are spending now $1.2 million extra, but that will help us to progress the project, and we're hoping for getting this project to the finish line.
And give us a larger share of flood flow.
That's exactly.
Winter flow that we would normally.
Curious, why did you hesitate on putting that on the slide?
Because the numbers are not final yet. I'm just trying to provide an information at this point. Definitely before, if this goes to the board, we are hoping that is going to be going into the later meeting in April, and by that time we'll have more information, more confirmed information that we can add into our presentation at that time.
Yeah.
Because if climate change is what we think it's going to be, there's going to be more rain, less runoff. You're going to get bigger flows in the wintertime in rain as opposed to snow in the Sierras. And that's going to be the time when the project is able to put more water through the project. And those people that buy in are going to be able to get a larger percentage than. Is that my thinking right in this thing?
I think that's the logic.
That's
a logic. I think, you know, to Ollie's point, you know, it is a bit of a moving target right now, right? Because they are doing updated analysis, and so I think, you know, the main takeaway is, you know, as an agency, are we still supportive of the project and kind of getting through the next phase of analysis and planning and some of the kind of engineering work up there to really look at the geological challenges and what that's going to look like. So getting more firm on the feasibility of that piece. And then ultimately, you know, there's going to be a decision point sometime out there in the future, probably 2 years away from now, that you're going to have to sign up with, you know, an agreement in principle, and that's where you're going to settle in on your final component of where you're participating at.
Just might ask too, who are the six scab agencies that are out there south of the Delta? which one, what are they?
I can't remember all of them. It's Tulare, King County, there's another.
Oak Flat.
And then, yeah, there's
Kern, right?
Kern is the Kern Agriculture. is not part of the Kern municipal is part of it. Kern have two parts of the contracts, the municipal contract as well as their agricultural contract. So the agriculture opted out, but the municipal are still in. But I will provide the names of the others later on.
Coastal community, Santa Barbara.
Coastal.
And unsure about San Luis Obispo.
They are in.
They're in.
Yes.
Another question, the five agencies north of Delta, why were they involved in the first place?
Because they're state water contractors.
Okay.
So the whole thing was approached by the state water contractors. So but the state water contractors gave the option for them to opt out because there's no benefit for them.
Yeah, okay. Originally, they shared in the cost for San Luis Reservoir. That it increased the overall allocation of the project. This is back in the 60s. That was the concept that it, you know, all the water was going into one pool, and DWR would give the allocation based on that pool. Since then, there've been water settlement agreements with North Delta contractors where their allocation is different than than the bigger pool is now. So it didn't make sense for them to participate.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I don't know. Question. I'm somewhat confused. How do I increase from 2.6% to 3% could almost double our benefits from project. Well, on its face, doesn't make sense to me yet.
Yeah,
must be an explanation back.
And I need to go back to the model I can share the model with you.
Okay.
But that's I'm just picking the information from the model, and the information of the model, how the model works, was not shared totally with us. We just received the information as, you know, it could move from this target to this target. And they told us, you know, we're still revising it. We're not finalizing it.
Okay. Because the other question I'd have would be, do we anticipate that during these periods when Delta conveyance water becomes a bit available, that there is available conveyance capacity in the aqueduct to move to us? I think the answer is going to be yes, because of our extra dental standing capacity and so forth, but I think that would be wise to put some pencil to paper to make sure that's the case.
If I understand your question correctly, Dr. Marx, is that if this water is available, do we have the capacity for us specifically or all the South of Delta members? If for us specifically, we might need, when we receive the final numbers, we need to run our own models and to make sure that we have the capacity to the conveyance capacity and everything that's available for us.
I'm concerned about our specific.
Our specific.
Conveyance capacity.
Right.
Because the state's going to move its table A water first. That's going to have the highest priority. Now I anticipate that, you know, we're pulling these high flow water that's going to be available during January and so forth, when project is, the State Water Project original table lay is constrained at the delta.
So would that mean that, that there wouldn't be any Article 21 water in the future because that extra water would go to contractors who, the Table A people would get their Table A. The extra water would not be going to Article 21. It would be going to contractors who bought in at a larger share, the 2.6 to 3%.
Well, who participated in the project?
Who participated?
Whether at 2.3 or 3%.
Yeah.
But there lies the basis of a rub with Tulare, who's suing under CEQA. But they feel that this project should have absolutely no impact on them. And that includes storing carryover water in San Luis. That's the other thing about this project is more carryover water. Or contractors
who participated
with. I'd like to see more water carried over in San Luis. And Tulare's and other non-participants are arguing that.
Oh, I can see their argument.
To the question of whether it's an opt-in or opt-out contract.
If I may add to Director Mars, I think that's one of the issues that the state water contractors is now trying to resolve. And I think that was part of the agreement in principles that they were trying to resolve and ensure that the six contractors who were not participants, that their ability to take advantage of Article 21 as well as the carryover capacity is not going to be, you know, impacted or severely impacted. And I think that's one of the things that recently I heard that is continuously working on it, the DWR and the contract, the state water contractors who is the non-participant contractors. That's an issue, exactly. That's the issue that they're saying that there is a chance that they're not going to get Article 21.
So I guess I didn't understand, too. If you jump from 2.6 to 3, but you said later on down the road, this is the planning stage, later on down the road, then there's a settle up point, then why are you jumping up to 3? If you're not getting 3 at the settle up point.
And I think
that's guaranteed that 3 down the road.
It's if you maintain your, it's a decision by the agency. You can maintain your,
you can maintain the 3.
You can maintain the 3 or you can change to 2 different.
Okay, so there's
the demand is up to 3. That's what we are asking for.
I guess what was the basis for increasing it to 3%? I know.
So
the reason we did the 2.3 to 2.6 was to kind of pick up some of the slack of the non-participants exclusive of the basis for the 3%.
The basis for the 3% is Kern County, their agriculture component, they are not participating. So there is a 12% gap right now to reach the 100%. That need to be divided among everyone. So when we divide, when the state water contractors divided that 12% that left over or opted out by the agriculture group of Kern County, that's where we see the increase. Our increase goes to 2.97. If divided, this is just in one scenario, divided among everyone, our share goes to 2.97%. Okay. And so I think after conversation with and then still this is still a they're reviewing different scenarios because there might be some other agencies who might say I'm not going to go more than this percentage, So even if you divide it among all of us, I'm not going to go over this percentage. So there's still some discussion dynamic in the determination of the participation level. And that's why we said for safety, it's up to 3%, which is up to $9 million. That's what we determined.
Okay. Okay. So 3% is actually a little bit beyond what would be needed to cover the 12% of the non-participating kern.
We are picking only 0.4%.
It's our share.
Our share is going to be not...
Our share of the non-participating kern would be 0.4%.
0.4%. Okay. That's it, yeah. 0.4%, not 3%.
Got it.
Okay. Any more questions, comments?
No.
Yeah, this should be a long night.
The project is extremely important to our agency. And I would suggest when talk to the board, show them how much state project cost per acre foot, that if you could clarify that range that you showed up with that chart.
Mm-hmm.
Is that with or without dump conveyance?
Mm-hmm.
I think some directors will want to understand that in more detail. We all know if Met doesn't participate, the project's not coming. And I think that to the extent there are more contractors that sign up early for this, that puts us relatively in a better spot. Let's see. That there are 10 other agencies, 12 other agencies that are ready to move forward in this next planning costs. I think that takes away the argument some people have that we're being asked to do it all.
Yeah.
But if it's show that this is collective, this is a statewide project, I think that positions the project better and positions us better, because we really want this project to move forward. So I don't want to discount the potential additional supply that we might from this project, but what really took for me personally as a driver is the idea of losing the delta. And we've got an earthquake, we've got a storm event, or just the random happenings of the delta that potentially can cut us off from our state project supply. And, we're trying to get by with half or less of what our supply is for this agency.
Understood. When do you think you'll be ready to present this to the board?
Second meeting in April.
All right. Any other comments? Also, thing was and
that was general manager Stone also, I think.
If our cost at this time is 9 million, Met's cost for the next 2 years would be in the neighborhood of 115 million for their share of planning. A little more than that, actually.
Yeah. And they at the same time they're trying to move forward with an ambitious recycled water program.
Okay. Thank you. Some top items today. All right, let's move on to item number 6, Water Resources Directs Report.
I'll try to make this one quick, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to give a quick update on the water supply status because Sarah, we were not able to have her today presenting because of the full agenda, but hopefully she will come back in April and give a full presentation about the water supplies at that time. So the state water project location went up from 10% to 15% at the beginning of this month or end of February. So, since the last presentation, I think that Sarah did in middle of February, the hydrology in the state overall improved. We are actually, snowpack is at 100% of April 1st at this point, statewide. This is a statewide average. The local precipitation is at 20 inches. This is 116% of the annual average. So we are getting more. We got more rain this year than the annual average of 17 inches. Our total demand, local demand here for January and February is 5,000 acre feet. So the 2 months we maximized at 5,000 acre feet for the 2 months. Over the last couple of months, we didn't have any banking activities. We didn't put any water. We didn't take any water. So I think that's the water supply update. We had a visit to Orange County Water District recharge facilities. A group of the employees from different departments in the agency went and visited the facilities, have a 3 hours meetings with the facility managers and a tour, looking into some of the places as we are contemplating into looking into recharge abilities into our areas, and we're trying to learn from their experiences and what their issues and things like that. And we had a good chance to take people from operation in our side and water quality as well as water resources and engineering team of different departments from SCV Water and went down there and visited with them, and they were very courteous to host us for about 4 hours, including the presentations and meeting. And so really appreciate that opportunity. Our staff also really appreciate that opportunity. The last thing that I wanted is Sarah Fleury has submitted an abstract for Innovation in Climate Resiliency Conference in Washington, D.C. It's a very prestigious conference that's actually the technical sponsors for this is the 9 national labs. And so her abstract was accepted, and she is going to April, and she's going to be talking about how SCV Water kept water flowing in face of the extreme weather and new regulations.
Excellent.
That's the end of my presentation. And any questions?
Thank you. Any comments from the public? Virtual directors? Congrats to you and Sarah. Okay, let's move on to our next item, committee plan calendar.
So no change in the calendar as of now. So, but if you have any questions or any topics that you would like us to bring, we'd be happy to include that in the agenda.
Yeah. Any comments from the public? Virtual? Yeah, April 2nd is going to be a very long day, very long day. So, hopefully, you guys will be able to take some notes. Okay. Yeah, definitely visuals are the key. Let some numbers here. It'll be very helpful. Any other comments from directors?
The calendar shows Delta Conveyance going to the first port meeting in April.
We are going to change that.
Going to change that.
Yeah, we're going to change that.
Okay. All right. I'm number 8, adjournment. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, staff. Thank you, directors.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.